Thank everybody for being here, and apologize to those who got here before our quorum, which is you out there. So, Executive Management Committee, we will start. We have a quorum, Mr. Antonovich, Mr. Yaroslavsky, and myself. Did we ever beat Ms. Du Bois in here? I don't think so. Somebody better check, make sure Ms. Du Bois is okay. Because we were just wondering. We were concerned because we never beat you in here. So we want to make sure you're okay.
I was partying.
Ah. I've heard that. I heard there were pictures, too. But I don't know anything about it. Okay, first item up. Ms. Du Bois, since you're standing, would you lead us in the prayer, please? The Executive Officer's Report, Mr. Leahy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I wanted to note for you real quickly that I was in Washington a few weeks ago, and General Motors and APTA put on a work session on transit. General Motors has an increase in interest in transit based on some large, very macro demographic trends they're looking at. So they are looking at having an event here in May, co-sponsored also by APTA, and I've offered them Union Station. Should be very exciting, very thought-provoking. And with that, I'll conclude my report. Thank you. Thank you.
That's good. All right. Next item up, Mr. Raymond.
Oh, I can't even talk about it. Okay. Broke my arm skiing, actually.
I'm sorry?
Broke my arm skiing.
Who gave you? Okay, then the question is, who gave you time off?
The question is, where did you find any snow?
And that, too.
I was in Vail, actually.
Matt's been counseled as to growing up and acting his age in the future.
Yeah, at first I got sympathy, then I got reminded how old I was.
Okay, who gave you sympathy? I'd like to talk to them.
Strangers in the elevator.
Okay, that makes sense. That makes sense. All right, Mr. Raymond, please.
Good morning.
We're communicating well, but let's go into the report.
Okay, thank you very much. Yes, my report today is basically reminders of great things that are coming up. One, we have the Expo line, which is launching on the 28th for the public in the weekend, the VIP events on the 27th. We are gearing up and moving full speed ahead. We have community events planned. We have all kind of outreaches currently going on, both in the local media as well as on the Internet. So we are moving full speed ahead with that. There are free rides that are going to be offered to the public on Saturday and Sunday, and there's events that are taking place on Saturday, public events. So everyone is looking forward to that. And also, as part of the expo opening, all the art has been installed. This is just an example from one of the artists and how it will appear at the station. But this has been another monumentous effort to get this going, and it will really add to the customer environment as we move forward. Also off in the distance is the Metro Orange Line opening. We're beginning the pre-launch efforts there, focusing on safety as well as on the testing and everything else that goes along with that. And that's the extension that will take place this summer, and we're hoping to begin all of our public updates in May. Another launch is coming out over the summer, and this is primarily the transponders, but the express lanes, we're going to begin the initial launch for that as well, too. And the key to this program is basically getting the transponders out in the public's hands. So we're going to have a pretty comprehensive campaign that first focuses on that as we move forward to the opening in October, next fall. Dodger Stadium Express, again, open, and the Dodgers are doing much better this year on a lot of fronts, and our our service. And actually, one good thing to note about Dodger Stadium Express is even last year, during a down year of attendance with the Dodgers, our the ridership actually rose on the our shuttle service. And so it's something that's been basically established as a mainstay of the system. And again, just a reminder, this is funded by a clean air grant. And then finally, we've launched our mobile app, which is much more. It's probably leading the transit industry in terms of mobile applications. It gives all of our real-time information in the palm of your hand. Everything from next trip information systems. You can download all of our timetables. It's a very powerful tool, and it's also very applicable to where technology is heading. And it's both going to be on the Android as well as the iPhone. And it should be, if it's not available now, it'll be next week. And with that, that concludes my report, and happy to answer any questions.
The data on Orange Line, Matt, and Canoga, do we have a date? Is that June?
We are starting pre-revenue operations on 23rd. 23rd of April.
Okay.
And then we will be watching the intersections and how they perform, and then we will fix a date. It will be in June.
Thank you. And I understand this project's also just, again, under budget at this point. Outstanding. We may have an idea to what to do with that in the area, but that's great news. Thank you, Murthy. Thank you. Thank you, Matt. Any questions for either gentleman? All right. Thanks, guys. Appreciate it. Item 39. Mr. Turner, Mr. Haparian, it's time for the dynamic duo. Dynamic?
Semi.
Very competent, but dynamic? I mean, yeah. Who's up first?
I'll start, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, good morning. Typically, we start off with an update on the authorization bill. This morning, I'm very pleased to provide some positive information that we received about 10 minutes ago, and it relates to the Senate Transportation Appropriations Bill. That bill was marked up in subcommittee earlier this week, and about 10 minutes ago, they concluded their markup, and the markup, it's our understanding, includes $120 million in a new starts category that is inclusive of the regional connector and the West Side Subway. Our interpretation and the interpretation of the Senate appropriators is that this amount is consistent with the federal fiscal year 2013 budget released by President Obama in February of this year. I want to
very slowly and emphasize.
You need to know the amount of work that went into this. So
say it again, so we all understand.
About 15 minutes ago, the Senate Transportation Appropriations Committee concluded their markup. This is a markup that had two iterations this week. Earlier this week, the subcommittee marked up their legislation, and today the full committee, under the chairmanship of Daniel Inouye, held their markup. That markup includes funds for the Transportation Department and also for the Housing and Urban Development Department. The mark for new starts was set at approximately $2 billion. Of that amount, $120 million is in the account that is inclusive of our two new starts projects and a project in Washington State. I want to express my personal thanks to our chairman and members of this committee, certainly to Senator Feinstein, who sits on the subcommittee of jurisdiction, for their support. This is a significant milestone as we move forward to securing the new START chair for both the regional connector and the West Side Subway extension. In the President's budget, $50 million was allocated for federal fiscal year 2013. In the President's budget, $31 million was allocated for the regional connector. And these amounts are consistent with the Senate-adopted measure that occurred 10, 15 minutes ago.
Which is outstanding news. And because it comes out of the bill, it's not an earmark. because it came in from the author of the bill the way it did. It makes it part of the president's budget now. And with that money, we can move aggressively on both the connector and on the subway.
Mr. Chairman, that is correct, and there's a second distinction that I think it's important to bring to the attention of this board, is that the money allocated in this bill assumes that the projects will be awarded a full funding grant agreement in calendar year 2013. So that means that the Senate and certainly the administration have an eye towards achieving a full funding grant agreement in calendar year 2013 for both of these projects.
So, and to be specific, that's really an achievement. To get an authorization, appropriation vote, pardon me, in advance of the FFGA is a great accomplishment.
Yeah, I think what you're correct, Art, and I think what's also of note is the fact that we have not achieved a ROD yet for the West Side Subway extension, but there's broad recognition among policymakers in Washington. And I want to say policymakers not just from Los Angeles County, but policymakers at the USDOT and the Senate and the House, that this is a significant public works project that merits federal investment. That's item number one. Item number two relates to the authorization bill.
Before we get to number two, Robbie, thank you and your team for all the work also. The mayor, Zev, you know, members of this board have been very aggressive in D.C. Congresswoman Harmon, when she was there, along with Senator Boxer, and a number of members of the delegation have been very helpful, none as much as Senator Boxer and Senator Feinstein, particularly here. And I give credit to Senator Boxer for creating a bipartisan bill in the Senate, which I think is what you're talking about next. But as you said and the mayor said and Art said, to get two projects of this magnitude on a New Starts track and to be now funded for those projects is pretty much unheard of in transportation in this country. And, you know, it goes back to what the mayor was saying about having all the tools in the toolbox. This is one more that's going to enable us to, we're going to be able to put some people to work pretty quickly now based on that, assuming Congress passes his budget, but they will. But as soon as that happens, and knowing that it's coming, we can get very aggressive on the schedule on both those projects, two more of the Measure R projects that are being accelerated. But thank you and your team for your work, too.
Thank you very much.
And Art, I guess.
The second item relates to the authorization bill. The House has passed H.R. 4348, which is a 90-day extension of the surface transportation programs in our nation. It was passed by a vote of 293 to 127. This is important for the following reason. The House of Representatives had attempted to pass their own standalone bill, H.R. 7. They were, broadly speaking, unsuccessful. It was a combination of Speaker Boehner not having a unified caucus and a combination of the Democrats not willing to provide any votes towards passage of H.R. 7, which led to the adoption of 4348, which is a 90-day extension with two additional elements. It has the Restore Act included in it, which permits offshore drilling in the Gulf Coast, and number two, it includes language approving the Keystone XL pipeline. And so what's going to occur now is that it's very likely that this extension is going to be used as the legislative vehicle to conference with the Senate-adopted S-1813, which is MAP 21, which Chairman Katz referenced just earlier. And so right now, Senator Boxer, Chairman Mica in the House, Ranking Member Rahal are calling on Senate Majority Leader Reid, Speaker Boehner to appoint conferees to bring these two pieces of legislation together and get us an authorization bill. And lastly, I'll conclude that we continue to work strongly on our Tiger IV request. We are supporting three requests. We've actually submitted three requests and supporting a fourth request from the Foothill Construction Authority, and we hope to hear back from the administration on whether those grants are going to be awarded probably in the July-August time frame. And that concludes my report. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Questions for Rafi about the DC program. Rafi, again, really important news that fortunately people watch who understand like yourself, because it looked like a normal extension, which was not going to pass the Senate. The key was, of course, it is a clever way to get a conference vehicle there. And I think Speaker Boehner, who, frankly, I give high credit for hurting that caucus of his, and I don't know how he does it, but made a critical mistake when he tried to make transit and transportation partisan by taking out the transit funding. And he found out it's not a Democrat or Republican issue, because if you're an urban representative, Democrat or Republican, you need transit.
That's right.
And got a little bit schooled in it. So hopefully this will allow the Senate to take the lead with a fully, you know, fully developed bipartisan bill. And I understood, as you did, that they're pushing Senator Reid in particular to appoint conferees today to keep the pressure on the House. So our last person standing strategy, you know, by default, may be the one that comes through here. But that's good news.
Yes, Senator Boxer is playing a very strong hand in conference.
Yes. And Senator Inhofe, who supported, co-authored with her. So that's a good bipartisan team. Thank you very much. So, Mr. Turner, everything is easy at the state?
Let me acknowledge as well, because from the beginning, that's why I mentioned him yesterday, my state of the city. From the beginning, he understood, just as his predecessor, Oberstar understood, that this is a way for the federal government at a time of high deficits and debt to allow us to accelerate our programs, to allow us to build infrastructure when there's not a lot of federal money. So I want to acknowledge him as well.
Very true and very appropriate, Mr. Mayor. Thank you.
Okay. Good morning. The legislature is busy moving bills through the policy committee process. The deadline for policy committees to hear bills is April 27th. So this month is a very busy month for moving bills through committees. Let me just highlight a few of those right now. Our jointly sponsored measure, SB 1225, which would establish a local governance mechanism for the Southern California Intercity Rail Line, is scheduled to be considered in Senate Transportation and Housing on April 24th. Yesterday, the Assembly Local Government Committee approved our sponsored measure, or customer of choice measure, which streamlines our procurement process. AB 2440, as I mentioned, that was approved in Assembly Local Government. We're also moving a number of our other bills forward. I would like to mention that AB 1446, Assemblymember Fuhr's measure, which would authorize the extension of Measure R, was approved by the Assembly Local Government Committee last week and is scheduled to be considered in the Assembly Transportation Committee on April 23rd. We do not have a formal position on the bill, but it is on the committee today for a formal position. Also, in the next few weeks, the legislature will begin to work through the budget process. Both the Senate and Assembly have held budget subcommittee hearings. They've been generally informational hearings. On May 10th, the governor is scheduled to issue the May revise, and we're anticipating that additional budget committees will be heard, will be held at that time, and that's when we will see the real debate on the budget start. There's been some news about decline in state revenues, so it looks like the legislature will have to make some additional cuts, but obviously one of the major issues with the budget has to do with the governor's ballot proposal for November. So we're going to be monitoring the discussions and see how the legislature moves forward on the budget in May. One of the key issues before the legislature is the pending allocations for the high-speed rail project. Yesterday, both the Assembly and Senate budget subcommittees held extensive hearings on the budget request from the High-Speed Rail Authority. The Senate was, I would say, much more critical of the High-Speed Rail Authority's request, and we're working with the High-Speed Rail Authority and the legislature on the proposal. What we're basically looking at is what we would call a three-legged stool. We think that in order for the high-speed rail project and the initial investments to have connectivity and utility, they must invest in the Central Valley, but also invest in what we call the bookends, which is connecting the project to Southern California, but also invest in what's called the connectivity funds. We have about $115 million in connectivity funds from 1A that will go to the regional connector, and we need that to provide the match for the regional connector project. I would like to provide an update on two bills which were before the board recently.
Michael, before the board, anything at the CTC that going on we should know about right now?
One of the things we're working with at the CTC has to do with first keeping the I-5 South project on schedule, and we've been working very closely with Caltrans to first ensure that the project stays on schedule. I think we've made significant progress in that regard. As we've gone through that, there has been an issue we're working with the CTC on where they have tried to move what they call bid savings on projects off of our projects onto non-LA County transportation projects. This happened recently where they identified bid savings of about $20 million on one segment of the I-5 South, and they wanted to move it to some undisclosed project. The CTC is basically trying to maintain some level of flexibility. We think that's a flexibility that's unwarranted because the I-5 South isn't just composed of five segments. It is one big project. So we're working with them to try and preserve the CMIA funds.
Appreciate that. Let me jump back to Mr. Turner. Mr. Aparian, for one sec. Any update on the Yvonne Burke nomination for Amtrak board? Because that's something I think we've discussed here, but if we haven't, you know, through largely a lot of the work that Art did and others, President has nominated Yvonne Burke for the Amtrak board. There hasn't been a director on that board from the West in a really long time, let alone a very competent, you know, and friend of this agency, somebody we can talk to. So that's a big deal, obviously.
It is a big deal. We've spearheaded two initiatives. One is to have people send supportive letters to the Committee of Jurisdictions, the Senate Commerce Committee, led by Senator Rockefeller of West Virginia and Kay Bailey Hutchinson of Texas, and to ultimately the folks in charge, which is Senate Majority Leader Reid and Minority Leader McConnell. We're also working with our home state senators to encourage the Committee of Jurisdiction provide its advice and ultimate consent to the nomination of
Committee of Jurisdiction being
the Senate Commerce Committee.
What a great place to be.
I know that Skag and others are sending letters. We should assemble a package of all those.
Well, Yvonne had also asked if we should get them all together and get them to her, so we'll talk about that also. So she wants to also have them to present, but that's huge for us out here, particularly given the pain Amtrak's been. So.
Welcome news.
Pleased to note that at the LOSAN meetings and other forums like that, the other counties have actually been glad to hear about an L.A. person, which I was...
First time for that.
Yeah, I'm pretty happy about that. That's good.
See, L.A.'s the big sucking sound, except because of our political clout, unless it helps get something they think is good, too, right? At which point, thank God it's there. Michael, back to you. Sorry. Thank you, Rafi.
David was just reminding me that the CTC has an item where they are allocating savings from other projects, and there's basically a call for projects process that's ongoing. We have an application in for that, and we can give the board more information about the specific amounts that are available and the projects for which we will be seeking funding, but we can get more information to the board on that. The two bills I wanted to give you an update on that are things the board had previously considered. First is AB 1600, which has to do with authorizing the Gold Line to pursue the Foothill Construction Authority to pursue the Gold Line project into San Bernardino County. The board had concerns with two aspects of that. The first is would it obligate us to both operate the line in San Bernardino County and then fund operations of the line, but also would it obligate us to fund construction of the project beyond that, beyond the amounts we've already given them. We've been working on amendments with the Construction Authority and Sandbag that would address both of those issues, so it would clarify that we are not obligated to provide any funding beyond that which we've already allocated. And the second amendment would require that we would have to be reimbursed from Sandbag for our costs in operating the line. We have a draft of amendments that's been responded to. We're trying to work those out with the authority and incorporate those into the bill. The second bill I wanted to bring up is AB 2405. 405 by Assemblymember Blumenfield, and this is the measure that would allow alternative fuel vehicles to use the express lanes. The concern that was raised was that authorizing these vehicles to use the lanes could put could jeopardize our federal agreement. The federal agreement requires a one-year demonstration period, and the Assemblymember is accepting amendments that would clarify that the vehicles would still have to pay for the demonstration period, but then they would be exempt from the tolls after that. This was an agreement that was consistent with the federal agreement. He is incorporating language into the bill. It's not in there now, but the bill was heard in committee, and he verbally stated that he was going to include those amendments. I would like to add we still have to go back to the state. There are a number of reports we have to do, both to comply with the federal agreement and with the state agreement. We have to go back to the state a couple of years after our program is in operation to seek approval to make it permanent. We can include data about the impact of the vehicles on the lanes at that time. Additionally, we contacted DMV because there was a concern that there might not be very many vehicles of these actually on the road. We contacted DMV, and they've told us that they've issued 87 stickers statewide.
Okay, so this whole brouhaha actually wasn't necessary, but I'm glad that we've made progress in resolving it and that we're not in a contest with the chairman of the budget committee. I appreciate your team's work and his work, his office, and his work also on getting us to this point. So keep us informed. Thank you. Are we going to do legislation?
The first measure on item number 40 is AB 1446 by Assemblymember Feuer, and this is the measure that would authorize an extension of our sales tax. The measure has been amended recently. When it first came out, it required that the proceeds from the tax be used for acceleration of the transit projects first, and then the balance could be used. The Assemblymember has amended the measure to authorize a clean extension of Measure R, so the bill does not do anything other than authorize Metro to extend Measure R and then bond against the revenues to accelerate the projects in Measure R. And we're recommending support on that measure.
All right. So the fear bill is before us for support. Before we take a vote, one thing that we do need to do, and I know Art, I know the mayor's office has been working closely with you on a schedule of activity of things we need to do, assuming we're going to go ahead with the measure. The board has not taken up putting it on the ballot yet, but there's a lot of things that have to be done in preparation, as well as the board's vote. But I know the staff and the mayor's staff and the CEO have been working on that schedule, so that's important that we have enough information before the board when we get to that item. So if we could work on that schedule, yes, that would be great.
Correct.
And
we'll
make sure we get the planning done, the ordinance done, and all that's good stuff. Ms. Du Bois.
Yes, I have a question. I believe that the bill locks us into the acceleration in the 3010 initiative. And my question is, if we utilize those scenarios, will it cripple us financially and limit our ability to run the system? That is to say, if our first project is to get a better sound system here, if we didn't have the funds, would we have to pull from another pocket to get the sound system if that was our first goal?
Sound system.
Let
me answer it this way. I think, and I'll let Art, why don't you just.
Well, I mean, what the bill does is would permit the board to consider placing the item on the ballot. It does not require that we put it on the ballot. That still remains in local hands, which is really the key issue here. When we come forward next month, we will. David Yale's been working on this for a couple of months. We will put together a package that will outline what the spending plan would look like, how it would affect the delivery of the capital projects, how it would pay for operations. Measure R does contain money for operations. So we will put together for you, well in advance of the next board meeting, a comprehensive discussion as to how all these moving parts fit together. In the end, though, it would still require actions of the board to move each of the individual projects.
Well, let me ask you to do this also. There's another item on here today, the 3010 initiative. And if you could I don't want to say marry those two, but use those together, because there's some real scary things about QTIP funding and other things that I think we need to be comfortable with.
Oh, no question.
So. Yes, yeah. we'll do. And I think what I will also do, it's not intellectually related, but it's conceptually related. We have some potential, some very good potential public-private partnerships that may allow us to accelerate the 405 project by 20 years, making it a tunnel, toll, automobile toll and transit facility, and perhaps also the 710 projects when we get a little bit further along on those. So one of the issues we'll be discussing with the board is, in the event those projects, one or more of them, can be substantially funded through toll revenue, and that should free up some Measure R dollars, what would be the process for allocating those monies in the future, and what would be the guarantee that we don't allocate those funds before, in fact, the project is completed? So we'll try to bring all that together.
And let me use your example rather than the microphone. If we decided that, and I'll pick the 710 because it's in my area, and so I'm not picking on anybody. We decided that the 710 was our major project. I would not want us to take funding from the Gold Line and from the High Desert Corridor to meet,
maybe the Gold Line,
to meet the goal and anything to meet the goal that is set out in the legislation. That's my concern,
and that's a completely valid concern. We actually, if I remember right, protect against that in the way the original Measure R was put together and the LRTP, which carries on, because there we have somebody with a better memory, but I believe you can only move money within categories once every 10 years by a two-thirds vote.
Correct.
All those protections stay. The in terms of the other question, to the other part of your question, Prop A and Prop C don't have sunsets.
Right.
So even beyond 2039, the long-range plan, we know that funding is coming in. And so, and nothing beyond 2039 is allocated, even though a lot of people have ideas about it. You know, the LRTP goes to 2039, and then future boards will decide what to do with that money afterwards. What this option really does, it doesn't commit us to any bonding, doesn't commit us to any sort of finance. It's a tool. It's another tool. So boards after us won't have to sit here and wonder what they have to do for funding. They will have the money to make that plans and make those decisions, hopefully.
And there would be an argument that could be made that says that a sunset date would be really, really nice to have. And that's, you know,
Yeah, and it's, you know, we found what we found after the 30 years that was in the first one, which was, you know, a lot of discussion about putting in and not putting in, was that most bonding authorities and other folks want 40 or 50 years, not 30. And this whole 20% we're trying to get through the feds or somebody else is because we couldn't go to 40 or 50. And if we'd been able to do that, we wouldn't be doing all this stuff with the federal government.
Well, and I suppose we only need 20 years more.
I understand.
I'm not going to go any further. I just...
But again, all it does is it's options for future boards. Mr. Antonovich, Diane, were you done? Here, okay. Mr. Antonovich, anybody over here? Mr. Antonovich. I'm not getting near that.
To begin with, the legislation's not being developed in a vacuum. I'm sure there's a lot of input that ought to be considered and included in this proposal if it ever makes a date. But the question is regarding the requirement that MTA accelerate the Measure R projects first before spending on new projects. That does restrict MTA, and wouldn't it be better use to have a bill that lifts the sunset and gives our board the opportunity to place an extension on the ballot, which would be better in meeting the transit needs?
Well, the previous version of the bill did that. I mean, it said we had to use the funds to accelerate the projects in Measure R, the transit project specifically, and we couldn't do anything until that was accomplished. The new version of the bill is just a clean extension. It does have a provision that says we shall bond against the revenues to accelerate projects, but that doesn't preclude us from adopting an ordinance that, for example, reflects the entirety of Measure R. We think we can still adopt an ordinance consistent with the current Measure R based on the language in the bill now.
And does the legislation allow for the acceleration of both transit and highway projects? Because the first version only supported transit before highway.
Yes, it does. The current version does that. It allows for both.
For both. And the Would the, for example, would future Measure R revenues be used to accelerate only current Measure R projects that have full funding, or could they accelerate Measure R projects that don't have full funding?
I think
the answer is yes. Sure.
Yeah, and but I think it would be a choice of the board.
Well, yeah, but the projects, paradoxically, which benefit the most are those which are furthest out. So some of the rail lines and the highway projects which are further out could be accelerated the greatest.
So would it fund the remaining portion of the GO line to Claremont? Because right now it's to Azusa, perhaps Glendora.
I think that we're constrained by what's in Measure R, the original Measure R. That's kind of the Bible of the projects that we are under, if you will, contractual agreement with the taxpayers to deliver. Now, when that Measure R program of projects is completed, then, of course, it would be up to the board to identify other things. I mentioned a moment ago about freeing up money from, for example, a 710 project. Once that were completed, if, in fact, it were paid for with toll funds, I think that money could then be made available to do other projects in the same region, San Gabriel Valley area.
So right now, if a Measure R-2 was to be adopted, there is no guarantee that the gold line would continue to Claremont.
I think it would be at the board's that's two things. One is the board still has to develop an expenditure plan and determine what that expenditure plan looks like. For example, will it be just categories as our existing A and C are, or will we actually decide specific projects from 2039 on? So the board still has to first consider that.
Well, does Measure R take it all the way out to the east?
No, the current Measure R funds it to.
I know there's a funding constraint, but what does Measure R, the words in Measure R say?
The words in Measure R say it goes to Claremont.
Well, okay, so then that would be. We're talking about funds to accelerate the Measure R program.
Yes, and it does say that the goal line goes to Claremont. In
Measure R. So it would guarantee that.
Well, the Measure R, the goal line is referred to as a line that goes to Claremont in Measure R.
Would a Measure R extension fully fund the regional connector?
Well, the connector is one of the Measure R projects, so it could be one of the projects that's accelerated.
It could be, but would it?
Well, we're also seeking federal funds for that. In fact, the Senate bill just passed includes, I think, $31 million
correct
for the connector. So we would continue to seek the board's approved, as you know, two of the projects for New Starts, the subway and the connector. We would certainly continue to go after New Starts funds, where it is not, at least from the staff perspective, we would not surrender or give up seeking highway funds for the highway projects or New Start funds for the New Start projects. So we would view it as supplemental.
But short of that ability to obtain state or federal funds, would we be able to complete the regional connector with these Measure R2 funds?
Yes, we believe we would.
With an operating revenue shortfall in the coming years, what is our plan to have a sustainable rail operations plan for the projects that don't cannibalize our bus operation funding?
There's a category in the measure for operations. I believe it's 10%.
25 is 20 for bus and 5 for rail.
Oh, it is 25% for operations. So that's built into the extension. Plus, if we're successful in this construction program, and whether at highway or transit, and we're putting $1 billion a year into construction in LA County, our sales tax revenue will be through the roof. Our operating funds will follow that, as well as the economy of this whole county will be much better off, I would assume.
Well, we believe, the LAEDC has actually done a number of analyses on the extension Measure R, and for example, the acceleration of just the transit projects alone creates 166,000 jobs. Overall, Measure R creates something on the order of over 500,000 jobs.
What is the critical path to place this on the ballot if we were to place it on the ballot?
There would be a motion from this board, requires majority vote of this board to put on the ballot, and then that goes to the Board of Supervisors. You have the ministerial function of placing it on the November ballot, which is the process we went through in 08.
But timelines?
Our plan is to bring it to the board with a recommendation for the May meeting. We would recommend an action at that time, and that would trigger the additional steps.
And unlike last Measure R, that was on the ballot. What are the plans to have the city councils, town councils, and communities and regional community organizations? I'm talking about the various alliances that we have and the COGs that have full discussion and input with direction to the MTA body, so we are able to have that information in a timely manner to make a timely, wise decision, unlike last time, which was a gang rape.
What? No, I'm saying.
That's why you had so many mayors and others opposing that measure.
67% of the people supported it.
I'm talking
that
about
kind of
the elected
terminology
officials who were opposing
is unacceptable
that
from a board member.
Pasadena,
sir.
Mayors of the
Amazon. That kind
Valley,
of terminology
Pasadena,
hang on, both
Gabriel
is
mayors
unacceptable.
Right. I want to see
time
that
out.
They are included in the
Mike,
process.
Okay, both guys, hey, both guys. First of all, we're discussing a bill that doesn't allocate any money, doesn't put anything in place. I think I understand your sentiment, Mike. I think the terminology was way off base and offensive. I take exception to that. I appreciate what you're saying about the process. That's one reason we're bringing it forward today, so everybody has plenty of time to know. And all the folks who can hear this or monitor it or do transportation.
Suggestions.
Have an opportunity. Keep in mind, all the bill does is take the sunset off. It doesn't reallocate anything. The proposal that is to be is discussed going to the ballot will do nothing other than the sunset date. Doesn't change the project list, doesn't change the priority, doesn't add any new projects, it doesn't change the expenditure plans. All that stays exactly the same.
And they will be engaged in the process.
I sure hope they take the opportunity to do so. I agree with you.
Okay. There. Thank you.
Okay.
Let me just say, if this body was to support that, we have to recognize and we should have the ability to oppose any other tax proposals that are on the ballot, because when you have a situation where California, in the latest statistic I was reading, lost $44 billion in tax revenues between 1992 and 2008 from the taxpayers who left this state, we're going to have a serious problem in asking for additional taxes for every other proposal that is on the ballot if we place this as a high priority and one that needs to be adopted. Otherwise, you're having voter fatigue, and you're going to have a straight rejection of all proposals, whether they have merit or not merit.
Yep.
And this body is going to have to take that recognition and support if we would vote to recommend a Measure R.
Understand. And Mr. Antonovich raises a good point in that it's going to be a long ballot and we come after state measures and all the rest. So we're going to have our work cut out for us because it's a two-thirds vote requirement just like before. All right. I have a motion and a second on support for the FUHR bill. Secretary, call the roll, please.
I'm sorry.
I want to call the roll on the FUHR bill, please, supporting the FUHR bill. Motion by Yaroslavsky, seconded by Villaraigosa.
Director Antonovich?
No, until I hear from the rest of the communities involved.
Director Du Bois?
No, my colleague is opposing me. So I have to go to
Director okay. Yaroslavsky? Director Villaraigosa?
Aye.
Chair Katz?
Aye. Is it appropriate then to remove funding for their COG from anything that comes out of Measure R? I know. I know. All right. Such will be the order. That is passed. Second is the Lowenthal bill.
Yes, this is a bill that Assemblymember Lowenthal has brought to us. It relates to our transit court and would authorize us to administratively process citations for vending on our system. She has, like the board, been concerned about the impacts of vending, particularly on the ridership on the Blue Line or the customers. Environment on the Blue Line. This will allow us an opportunity to handle the citations administratively. She's trying to work with us to both resolve a problem but find a way to deal with people who in some cases are just trying to make a living. So we want to work with her on this measure, and we have a support work with author because there are a couple of technical amendments we want to make to our transit court to facilitate the operation of the transit court. So we have a support work with author position on that.
Move approval.
I have a motion by Ms. Du Bois, second by Mr. Yaroslavsky. Any comments or objections by board members? All board members present as aye votes. Is that good? Such shall be the order.
The next measure says to be determined, because this is a measure we would sponsor, and it would we want to pursue legislation that would require that any proceeds from the sale of the properties on the SR 710 corridor remain in that corridor. The we're moving forward on the environmental process and the project, and it's possible that in the not too distant future, Caltrans could make a decision regarding the sale of the homes in that corridor. What we would like to do is seek legislation that would require that when the homes are sold, the revenues from the sale of the properties would remain available in that corridor. This would be something we would sponsor and move forward this year, so we have a support position.
It passed.
Okay. Sorry, Michael.
And item number C is a bill we would pursue regarding the 710.
Do you need a motion on it, even though it's a TBD?
Well, we want to sponsor it, so it's something we want to initiate.
All right. Is there a motion by Mr. Boyes and a second by Zev, or second by myself? Revenue sale of properties, MTA-sponsored bill. Any objection to all members present being aye votes? Such shall be the order.
The last bill is a bill by Chairman and Senator DeSaunier, who chairs the Senate Transportation and Housing Committee, and this would require the CTC to prepare a statewide rail plan. There is already a requirement to prepare one, but this would update the requirements to be included. We think it's timely, given both the movement on the high-speed rail program as well as our efforts to pursue local control of the low-sand corridor, and
move
we
approval.
Recommend support.
Motion by Mr. Boyes, second by Mr. Yaroslavsky. Without objection, all members present, aye. That shall be the order. Gentlemen, thank you very much. On to item 41, State of Good Repair Program. Is State of Good Repair just a state of mind?
Good morning.
Good morning, Ree.
We're asking the board today to approve the Customer Facility State of Good Repair Program Development Strategy. This strategy is in response to the four-part February 12th board directive, which is Motion 31, to improve our existing and future stations along our fixed guideway system. The item response to the first element of the board directive pertaining to signage and wayfinding connectivity elements such as crosswalks and sidewalks, streetscape. And we're also looking at the signage to make it easier to use the transit system and improve the customer experience. I have with me today Chris Haskell and Roderick Diaz. Chris is our project manager. Roderick is our project director, who will briefly go over the three-part strategy for you.
Good morning.
Yes.
This item is being brought in parallel with the next item on today's agenda, item 42, which is the report on customer experience improvements. Motion 31, Part A, basically was referring to a number of connectivity elements, which are shown here for reference. Of these connectivity elements, some are under the responsibility of local jurisdictions, which are the crosswalks and sidewalks, pedestrian bicycle signals, and the streetscape amenities. The station canopies and the bicycle racks, corrals, and other bicycle facilities are currently included in current capital projects. We have undertaken a thorough assessment of the current and planned initiatives and have developed a thorough program development strategy addressing the signage and wayfinding. Our program development strategy consists of three components.
So this is a program that's basically designed through better coordination with locals, better signage to give our customers more information on what's happening in real time. That's the ultimate goal?
That's correct.
Okay, and this is a outline of how we get there?
Yes. Our program development strategy outlines our proposed enhancements to the signage and wayfinding.
We're also asking you to approve a life of project budget to start the phase one approach, which will upgrade the signage at 20 Blue Line stations, as well as to include in future budgets money for the maintenance of those signs.
How about the maintenance of the stations on the Blue Line?
Pardon?
Maintenance of the stations on the Blue Line.
So that is also not part of this element, but part of another.
Okay, because I think everybody would like to be standing in a better situation than a lot of those stations are today while they're reading the signs.
Well, Mr. Chair, we've begun to reallocate resources, and I think the Blue Line stations are much better than they were a few years ago.
Right.
We're going to continue to make that investment in all, especially the blue and the green that were the worst. if you ride the subway now, the stations look pretty good. And we're going to extend that to every line in the system and bus stops.
Great. And I bring a challenge back from Toronto, a city of 2.3 million people that has 1.3 million boardings a day on the bus system. Go figure. But anyhow, okay. And this is in the, it's in the, this is included in the 12-13 budget already?
No, it is not.
Okay.
We're also asking the board to approve four positions that are also not included in the budget, two for countywide planning and two for creative services. In the FY14 budget, our facilities maintenance will be requesting additional bodies.
With board approval of this action, we'll amend the budget that we're going to be proposing.
Okay. Board members?
I have
questions,
one.
Please. Yes.
I'm sorry.
Diane. No.
I didn't wait to be recognized. I would like to see us put off the positions, six positions, and make it part of the budget process, because I think there is opportunity then for more...
context.
More
we can,
discussion
I think,
about it. Yeah.
I understand.
I agree.
Supervisor agrees also. I think so. Let's do that. And since it's going to go in the way, the idea was to amend it into the proposed budget. It'll still take effect the same time, but rather than deal with it in this item, we'll deal with it as the overall budget item is what the councilwoman is asking. Okay, Brian?
Yeah.
So, taking the FTEs out from here, we still have the outline and the timeline that you need approval on to move forward.
We need the board to approve the $8.8 million to also include in next year's capital budget to actually implement the signage for the
I assume your comment was capital as well as FTEs or just FTEs?
I was specifically talking about FTEs, but I think the whole thing ought to be part of the budget. I'm sorry, $8 million is a lot of money.
It is. Okay. Let's do this. And tell me if this will work. And the important thing is the start date's going to be the same when the budget gets approved. Whether if we did it today or do it in the budget, that doesn't change your timelines at all, because until the budget was approved, it's not a done deal. Can we separate just the financial piece of this is going to be dealt with as part of the budget item. What's left is the timeline and the process and the steps you're going to go through. Does that need approval by the board, or do you want to just all wrap it into the budget item that'll have this information as backup for the budget item?
We would start working on the assessment element of it, waiting in anticipation of the board approving this. So
okay.
We're okay.
So what do you need from us today if we take the finance piece and put it all into the budget item?
We'd like you, well, if you would just approve the strategy without the actual dollars for FD.
Is that okay, Diane?
Yeah, I think so. We've got some things that I see us going to do that.
Mike, you okay?
Would be city responsibility, but I think we can work through that.
Okay. Then without objection, we will approve the strategy piece of it, and we will wrap the financing piece into the budget discussion and deal with it in the next couple of weeks because the budget's scheduled for
soon.
Next month. So, all right. Without objection, such will be the order.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks, Mike. That's 41 and 42. 43, Bird, 44, Dan.
Are there any other action items today?
For compliance, 45 is action, is it not?
I'm sorry, labor compliance, is that the only one that's action?
Yes, item 45.
Item 45.
43?
Dan, if you will hang on for 1 second, please. Can I have item 45 up first, please? A supervisor has a scheduling issue at the board, and
so does this other one, apparently.
am I the quorum now?
Can I use Mel on this committee as a board member? Emacs. Yeah.
Yes.
Mel, welcome.
Yes.
Mel can vote as a board member.
So to make a quorum.
Yeah.
Committee. Yeah. Okay.
Okay. Good. So good. Okay. Item 45.
Welcome, Mel.
Yes.
Okay.
We're in a little bit of a hurry.
Good morning. I'm Linda Wright, Executive Officer of Diversity and Economic Opportunity. And with me this morning is Miguel Cabral, who is our Director of Diversity and Economic Opportunity, who's responsible for our PLA, our Construction Careers Policy, and labor compliance. As a result of the passage of Assembly Bill 436, the State Department of Industrial Relations has created a monitoring unit. The Compliance Monitoring Unit was established to monitor and enforce prevailing wages, requirements on certain public works contracts paid by state-issued bonds, or that utilize the design-build methodology. Awarding bodies are required to pay the Department of Industrial Relations a compliance monitoring fee on a per-project basis for its monitoring activities, or with the Department of Industrial Relations approval, operate its own labor compliance program. We are recommending that the committee adopt the proposed labor compliance program as detailed in Attachment A, adopt the resolution in Attachment B, which affirms Metro's commitment to ensuring the payment of prevailing wages, authorize the submittal of the program to the State Department of Industrial Relations, and authorize the Chief Executive Officer to amend the labor compliance program as necessary to comply with regulatory changes. We'll be happy to answer any questions that you might have.
Any questions?
Move.
Motion by Mr. Oslofsky, second by Mr. Boies. All members present as aye votes. Such shall be the order. Ms. Wright, thank you.
Thank you.
Next, let's go back now. Sorry, Dan. By the way.
Morning.
Let's try it again. Thank you.
All right.
Just an update on the Civil Rights Compliance
Program. You got to move one of those mics over, please.
This is an update on the Civil Rights Program in terms of responding to the review conducted by the FTA. Just quickly in review, it was partly a result of a civil rights complaint by the BRU. But it was not an investigation of the civil rights complaint of the BRU. We weren't singled out for review, and the review was conducted by an outside consultant. Five areas of deficiency were found in terms of how we comply with the guidance. Interestingly enough, we've had some news on this that's is kind of significant. The most serious allegation from the consultant that was included in the review was that Metro documented disparate impacts, and I think your presentation that you have in front of you says treatments, but it's disparate impacts resulting from service changes but failed to take the necessary legal test. And so we've been informed verbally by the FTA, actually last month, that the consultant had erred, and in fact Metro did not document any disparate impacts.
Did not document or did not find?
We did not find, and we did not document.
Right.
But we
could
have.
I want to be clear that it's not we found and didn't document. Didn't find and therefore didn't document.
Well, the work that was done was flawed, and we are in the process of redoing it to make sure that there are, in fact, no disparate impacts.
Good.
And that work is now completed and in front of the FTA and waiting for their approval.
So the FTA has come to the conclusion, and I believe we're still waiting for that in writing at this point, but that some of the conclusions reached earlier were made on factually incorrect data and the wrong conclusion was drawn from it.
The consultant used the wrong terminology. That's basically the
fairly significant terminology to get wrong.
Yes, it is.
And I understand you were actually the one who found that they got it wrong, so we are appreciative of that, obviously, because it's something we all take very seriously.
Thank you. So as a result of that, the FTA is going to be sending us a letter asking us to make amendments to the corrective action plan, and I anticipate that letter is going to come either late this week or early next week. We did prepare a corrective action plan within 5 days of receiving the original report from the FTA, And then we provided an updated one on February 29th. At this point, we still have not received any written comments on those plans. And again, I'm expecting that that will finally come late this week or early next week. And the updated plan did incorporate some comments as a result of the public outreach we were conducting and our contacts with the BRU. Just again, in summary, two of the five areas of deficiencies have been rectified. We have a new list of beneficiaries posted throughout the system, and we did you did approve a service standards and policies in December and January. The three areas of deficiency still remain: limited English proficiency, service and fair equity, and service monitoring. Going through those one by one, the first deficiency in terms of is limited English proficiency. And the FTA found that Metro did not comply with the LEP guidance that they have issued for transit operators. We must complete a four-factor analysis as required in the FTA guidance, and that four-factor analysis is unique to our agency. It's based on what languages our riders speak and what services they need.
Dan, hang on one sec. Could I ask folks in the audience to keep it down? If you want to have a conversation, do it somewhere else. And, you know, give the speakers the respect you'd like if you were up here.
Metro has completed a factor one, which is an inventory, and we identified 33 languages being spoken among our riders. We have submitted that to the FTA, and they haven't given us back a few minor comments. So basically, we're good to go with the next factors, and those are now being worked on by a consultant. Factor four is a language assistance plan, and the language assistance plan will be completed by Metro staff, and that's really based on what resources we have available to us in terms of providing those languages. We are on schedule to complete that for the end of the year. And one of the questions that was asked last month was, are we doing anything for the limited English proficiency people at this point? And indeed we are. We do publish brochures in multiple languages, and we provide a lot of programs and services in Spanish. Today's report on signage that was just ahead of me did indeed talk about making a much more use of pictograms in our signage program to help people who can't speak English.
Dan, the signage program was discussed earlier. They're coordinating with you in terms of what the feds will say, because, you know, I know we publish in 11 languages already, and so I take it that's why we're going to pictograms and the international symbols, because there are only so many languages you can publish in.
That's right. Yeah.
We would sell advertising inside our trains, but it has all the regs instead at this rate.
Yes.
And all the, yeah.
We are going out for a contract to provide telephone translation services. We have translated the Notice of Beneficiaries in Title VI policy in multiple languages. And we have improved the notice to the public about the access to translators at the committee and board meetings. And the transit court is in the process of translating a lot of the documents that they use. Deficiency number two is service and fair equity. The deficiencies are not civil rights violations, but result from a failure on our part to follow the guidance that we're required to follow. These include that we did not do an equity analysis for the 2010-2011 service changes or a number of fare changes that have taken place in recent years, and that's why we did not have a finding of disparate impacts. We did not have a definition of a major service change. That one has actually been rectified, and we'll receive notice from the FTA next week that we have met that requirement.
In terms of, you know, the things that the FTA pointed out, in terms of that checklist, how much of it have we fixed overall at this point? Where are we in
reckoning our... Well, they found five areas of deficiency. Two are complete.
Is it still five after the correction?
Three left.
After their mischaracterization of data, does that change those categories at all?
No.
Okay.
We still have... There are still deficiencies related to service and fair equity.
Got it.
So we... It really just changed one of a number of findings in that area. We have redone the equity analysis for the service changes in 2010-2011, and that's now with the FTA. You have already approved a major service change policy. Another one of the areas that they found was that we didn't do an equity analysis for major guideway projects, and that finding is also under review by the FTA, and so there may be some change in the requirements. And I know, again, the last month the question came up to explain an equity analysis, so just a couple of minutes on that. The equity analysis looks at the impact of fair service changes on minorities or persons with income below the poverty line. We look to see if there's an unintentional discrimination on the basis of race, color, or national origin, and we look at whether or not there are disproportionate and high and adverse impacts on minorities and low-income groups, and is any mitigation possible as a result of or in for the service changes or fare changes. The equity analysis must compare how the changes affect minorities or low-income people who are not minorities or having low income. And the key factors are travel time, walking distance, and cost. An equity analysis is required for major service changes, and that's the definition that you set last month or the month before. It's also required for any fare change, and that includes changes to the price of a fare, the rules associated with fares, or whether you can buy those fare products. An equity analysis at present time is required at the planning or programming stage for major guideway projects. That could change in the new guidance that's coming out this summer. And then if disparate impacts are found, the change or project can still proceed if the board agrees the change is consistent with agency goals and public interest, and if the alternatives to those changes would have a greater negative impact on minorities. One thing that's important in what we're doing is that there's really a sequential approach required. The work on resolving the deficiencies is advancing on multiple fronts, but it has to be sequential. So we started out with outreach on our major service change definition. The FTA approved that. The board approved it. Then we've done a draft of our service change methodology. The FTA needs to approve that. We've then prepared the service equity changes that are now with the FTA, and they're going to review that, and then we'll bring it here for you to consider. So everything has to follow in a certain path. One issue that we've had, though, is that our priority has been to ensure that the current projects are compliant before going back to some of the older changes. So that's why we brought to you the Expo and Orange Lines and had the FTA review those in advance of some of the other things that we would have liked to have done if we had more time. So those equity analyses needed to be completed before the lines could be open, and they were completed and they were brought to the board earlier this year. Next month, you are going to see the equity analysis for the 2010-2011 service changes. And in June, we'll bring you the report on the fare equity for 2010 and 2011 fare changes.
Right.
We have submitted a scope of work to the FTA for approval for engaging consultants to do the equity analysis of the Regional Connector, the West Side Subway, the Crenshaw Corridor. The Regional Connector one is actually underway already. And then we would use the same scope for Foothill and Expo 2 if the FTA continues to require that would be done. The final deficiency is in service monitoring. The FTA found deficiencies with the existing service monitoring program, and we have embarked on a new communications program that will be implemented in May of 2012. And finally, we're going to implement a new quantitative-based monitoring system for next year. In terms of training, I know that our chairman was interested in this one. We're going to have a session with the FTA in early May when they're out here for a conference. They'll spend some time out here going over their requirements. But we're going to hold off on the major training until the new guidance is published this summer, and then it will be more effective to hear from them on that new guidance. And again, repeating the schedule, we expect to have the fare and service equity issues resolved by June, the limited English proficiency deficiencies rectified by the end of the calendar year, and major guideway deficiencies rectified by January of next year. And just kind of
one second. Guys, I asked once. I will ask the officers to clear the three out of the back of the room or the guys over here, but I want to be able to hear Dan. And I want everyone else to be able to hear, Dan, this is serious stuff we're doing. And I would appreciate people respecting who's speaking. Dan?
And if there's any questions, have
perfect answer. Mel, you had a question, I believe?
I do. Mr. Levy. Is it Levy or Levy?
Levy.
Levy. First of all, I want to thank you for your report. I'm pleased to hear that in some additional follow-up that you've conducted that we are not in violation of some parts of this initial compliance report to the Metro system. However, my feelings as a board member is that our riders, the bus, the rail riders, all of our customers are our customers, and that we need to have a much higher threshold than just whether we are violating a civil rights law or not. And so I would like to ask, what is being done with respect to the service inequities that were identified, although they may not be violations of civil rights laws, but what are we doing to really help our customers with respect to what you are reporting on?
Well, at this stage, we have not found any inequities, so and we really haven't – the review itself was not one that looked at any violations, did not identify any violations.
Dan, hang on a sec.
Mr. Wilson, the mayor made a request last month, I believe it was, for an assessment of the cumulative effects of the schedule changes going back, I believe, to 2007. We will bring that report back with the assessment, as I believe you're referencing, in May. And at that point, we would look forward to having a conversation about this issue in some detail.
Yes. Thank you, Mr. Leahy. You know, I'm pleased, as I said, that we have essentially been found not in violation of certain civil rights laws or guidelines. But as I said, I think our standards should be much higher than just saying we have not violated, you know, someone's rights. You know, these are our customers. These are folks who help pay for the system. And they're the ones, in many ways, have no other choices other than to use our system. So my sense is that although, you know, you've been retained to help us in the civil rights area, I think that overall we need to be thinking about how can we improve the system, how can we give people more access, more reliability, safe and clean vehicles that the folks would be riding.
Yeah, I agree, and you know we're preparing performance data on cleanliness, reliability. We're reinvesting. We're focusing more on service delivery. When we come forward next month, and we'll have the new COO Frank Alejandro there. And I very much agree with what you're saying. We owe it to our customers to offer them on-time service and a clean vehicle.
Thank you.
Two comments under public comment on this. Esperanza Martinez, Ms. Martinez, good to see you, Esperanza. And then Su-Young Yang, also after Esperanza.
Good morning, members of the board. My name is Esperanza Martinez, lead organizer with the Bus Riders Union. For the last 20 years, this agency has showed contempt for civil rights and the 14th Amendment. The institutional legacy of the MTA has been that of disregarding the pleas of low-income riders and riders of color to protect bus service and keep fares low until a federal consent decree was imposed, forcing the agency to remedy civil rights harms. If Mr. Levy is asserting that no equity analysis was done, then that shows a complete disregard for your riders, like Director Wilson was asserting. During the consent decree, this agency used states' rights arguments to defy federal mandate to make improvements on the bus system, siding with segregationists. We hope that this committee plays an important role in leading the charge to ensure that the 1 million hours that were taken from bus riders is restored as a real way to remedy civil rights harms.
Thank you, Ms. Esperanza. I don't believe that's what Mr. Levy said, by the way, in terms of the disparity analysis. Dan, did you, just to be clear,
and then
Su-Young.
The findings of the consultant said that we did not conduct an appropriate equity analysis, and that is true. So we have done it now, and it is in front of the FTA, and we should bring it to you next month.
right. My apologies, Esperanza. I misstated slightly. I didn't get the timing on it. So, Dan, thank you for clarifying. Good morning.
Good morning, committee. This is, my name is Sun Young Yang with the Bus Riders Union. So I just want to clarify, this agency has done an equity analysis. No matter in Dan Levy's eyes how shoddy it is or great it is, you have conducted a Title VI equity analysis in your own riding and had put that there is a disproportionate adverse impact with the cuts. Clear evidence. Now, if FTA and what Dan Levy and your staff has been trying to lobby the FTA to disregard the factual evidence, if that's the case, let it be judged by the civil rights community. But the undeniable evidence is that this agency knowingly discriminated against bus riders, knew that the service cuts will lead to disproportionate adverse impact. For 20 years of civil rights violation history, that if any report says that there was going to be an adverse impact, this agency's first primary objective was to address that before moving on these cutting a million hours of bus service. We spoke to Linda Ford from the FTA Office of Civil Rights. This decision is not official, but neither would the civil rights community across the country would let this happen. Thank you very much. The only rightful remedy right now the board can play is restoring the million hours.
All right. We have a nice new switch up here. The one thing I do want to make clear, public comment is public comment. We will go by what facts say. We have not lobbied FTA or DOJ. That's been Bus Riders Union, so please let's keep that straight. The folks lobbying Washington are Bus Riders Union. We have responded to requests. We're working with the FTA. We take these charges very seriously, or the accusations, unfounded as some may be or truthful as others may be. We will deal with them, and we will address them. The mayor made it very clear, as has the CEO, that we will not tolerate discrimination of any kind. We don't, and we don't condone it. We don't encourage it, and we will address it should it exist, and that's what we are committed to. Dan, anything else?
No, I think you summed up nicely.
All right. Any other comments, board members? Thank you. We're good. We'll receive and file without objection. Thank you, Mr. Boyce. Now, what have we got left here? The TAP Working Group. That's got to be exciting. No, actually, that's pretty important at this point because
it's not exciting.
It's not exciting, but
anyway, I'll just be brief. The group has reached agreement on modifications required to transition the paper easy pass to a TAP easy card. We are beginning to implement the program. We hope to launch it by June or July. We'll continue to work on the transition of the interagency transfer, paper transfers onto TAP as well. We'll continue to look at the concerns they have in the areas of operations, financial reconciliation, technical, and I'm supposed to meet with them in May again. So that's all I have.
All right. Questions? All right, we are working at Metrolink also, and I appreciate your help and the mayor staff's help in trying to resolve some of these issues there. And, you know, we will get this thing done one way or the other.
Thank you.
May have to, anyhow, we'll discuss Cubic in another setting. Okay, thank you. Next item is the project acceleration methodologies. And David, I know, and Roger, we keep bouncing this from meeting to meeting. Hi, Monica.
Hi.
A presentation that will also be made to the full board?
Not this month.
Okay.
I
go for it.
Okay. If we could put the PowerPoint slide up. Yesterday, in our rush to get through this, I did not express my thank yous for the folks who've been helping us do this work. Barbara Lloyd is here from KPMG and Mike Schneider from his firm, whose name I don't know.
Infraconsult.
They both helped with aspects of this and reviewed our work to make sure that these strategies are credible. And Monica Suarez, who's also here, has done a lot of work with our firm, PFM, who's also been helping us. So if I may, before I start, assure the board that I will make myself and my staff available to go out and do outreach on with this presentation. This will begin at the Technical Advisory Committee on May 2nd. And is Mr. Kano still here? I've offered to go up to the North County and talk to them and anybody else who wants to see this presentation or the subsequent work that we will be doing. The presentation here is focused on the 3010 initiative that the board adopted. We have a strategy that says we must accelerate projects in their long-range plan sequence. That's the important thing to note about this slide. Also, we must coordinate this effort with our P3 program. The 3010 project accelerations include a report on pursuing the America Fast Forward mechanisms, other financing options we've looked at, and, of course, the local...
David, hang one sec. Diane?
I can make this shorter if I just get some questions answered.
Okay.
Okay.
We're talking about $34 billion, and as I asked you yesterday, I'm going to ask you again, is it reasonable or close to correct? Do we know, as a total measure, our funding, we're now estimating $34 billion, sorry.
36.
Okay, I
wrote
down 34.
That's our current forecast.
Okay.
Through 2039.
Okay, and is it reasonable? Yeah, as far as we know, right?
Yeah, the revised forecast is tracking well over the last 3 years. You know, we always expect some cyclical impacts, sometimes down, sometimes up. But to date, it's tracking on its new forecasted level. We've taken roughly a $4 billion hit. It's about 10% over the life of the plan due to the economic shock we just went through.
Okay. And I'm going to take page 9, and this may have changed with the announcement this morning, but we've got some really huge speculative funds in QTIBs and TIFIA.
Yeah, if we could go to slide 9.
On that line, you know, TIFIA is in play at $1 billion scored at the TIFIA right now is in the president's budget for around $127 million. Both Boxer and MICA agreed to score TIFIA for $1 billion should they actually get around to passing a reauthorization bill. But and QTIBs, frankly, have not come into play yet in D.C.
Right.
So that's I wanted to give that.
Okay. We're talking about $6-7 billion, and we think we're going to get $1 billion of it, and the other we don't know. Is that right?
If I may speak to the QTIB issue.
Just help me understand all this, that's all. You
can see here this sort of mountain represents the cost curve for all 12 transit projects in Measure R. If we were to deliver them all on their optimal schedule, we would need to raise this amount of money annually over time. QTIBs, as you can see, is a huge part of meeting that challenge. The strategy there was to use Measure R revenues through 2039 in an interest-free strategy subsidized by tax credits. We can backfill for some of this by further borrowing from Measure R than we currently plan to do, but not all of it. So in the next slide, you can see the QTIBs gap is about $3 billion after we do that backfilling. In addition, we've taken a haircut on our New Starts funds, making our gap about $4 billion. So the strategy here would be to extend the tax, marry it up with the TIFIA program expansion, and be able to come up with a balanced plan that we can operate and build.
So the fewer bill that we talked about earlier will help us solve these problems.
Absolutely, and the TIFIA program in Washington, they work well together. Some of the financial structures you can do with a loan direct from the federal treasury mm-hmm. are not available in an economically sensible way from the private sector. And so the two of them would work well together, both for highways and for transit.
Okay, and what does the amount of the loan do to other programs and financing needs that the agency may have? Does it supersede them? How does we're talking about this 8.38 loan, large loan.
Well, this would accelerate the 12 transit projects,
right,
and largely commit funding for the borrowing necessary to do that acceleration over the next several decades. As we got past 2030 or so, we could start looking at more borrowing to do new things in a future long-range plan. That's on the transit side. On the highway side, we're looking at closing a gap in the 30-30 strategy. That's pretty big.
Okay. Let me see if I have my notes. When you get to page 14, there's a... We assume extending current priorities, and wouldn't a new expenditure have to be developed for the excess funds beyond the bonding? Do you know what I'm saying?
The
excess funds?
Yeah, the
legislation calls for an update on the timeline on the acceleration, the FUHR bill. So we have to update that. I just wanted to clarify that piece.
Please do, because
we need to clarify that and the expenditure under the new plan, not changing the order of the categories, et cetera. David, in terms of excess funds, do you want to address that? Nothing is allocated after 2039.
Okay.
Prop A is not allocated. Prop C is not allocated. The Measure R wouldn't be allocated.
Okay.
But it isn't. Is that accurate?
That's right. David? And as we go through successive long-range plan updates, the extension of Measure R would provide additional resources for those plans.
Okay.
Yeah, the other thing that I think...
I'm trying to get through this so you can go on to bigger and better things.
It doesn't get any bigger than this.
But it might get better. On page 15, the suggested framework for allocation includes use original Measure R process for guidance, some sub-regions receive more highway funds, population equity by sub-region, and employment burden equity by sub-region. I don't understand those two.
When we were in the closing days of working to get Measure R on the ballot, we did some outreach and worked out a equitable allocation of the highway side resources that would complement the transit allocations such that there was a geographic equity, and the factors we looked at were population by subregion and the employment burden by subregion to give the board sort of measures of equity to look at as they decided how to allocate the highway side. We would propose that same strategy be worked through this time to ensure that there's a geographic equity here in the measure that we bring to the voters.
Okay, great. Thank you. Had I been on the board at that time, I would have probably understood this without asking for more clarification. But
yeah, we can get you the background from that time if you like.
No, that's I understand now, and that's all I needed to do.
Okay.
And I think that's having done all that, I move that we receive and file.
All right.
Thank you.
Thank you very much for your patience.
Moliere and Monica have been working on a presentation and their speeches. Do we really want to? Yeah, okay.
Oh. I'll bet they're glad they don't have to do it.
No, thank you guys for the good work and appreciate this, David. Thank you very much.
Okay.
Next item, I think we received and filed that. On the Blue Line Operations Assessment is a response to a letter by our Chair, Mayor Villaraigosa. And what have we got on that? All right.
John Roberts, Executive Director of Transportation. Mr. Chair, staff has prepared and received a file response to a board request for an assessment of Blue Line Operations. Specifically, this request directed staff.
Stop right.
Okay.
a little slower in the mic so we can understand
okay.
what you're saying. Because
the request
was directed wants to know.
Staff to respond to four specific areas, and these included safety review of grade crossing operations and safety devices, rail preventative maintenance actions, review of traction and power and propulsion systems, state of good repair, and rail maintenance staffing area. The report covers responded to each of these areas. We have attachments that include an exhaustive list of safety enhancements that we have incorporated. We also have a list of actions that we have done over the previous years, current actions, and future actions. We've spent $64 million, and we have another $494 million that's targeted.
Over what period of time?
From now till 2020.
Well, is the bulk of that front-loading to catch up?
This is a catch-up with the deferred maintenance that's been going on for the last years.
Okay. And
only the last year or
other? Years. This is previous years.
Okay. Yeah, no, I think there's a bunch of it. Yeah. Okay.
And any questions, I can go into more specific. We have staff here that may answer any specific questions about any of these specific areas.
I appreciate it. Would you make sure, please, that, and you may have already done this, so forgive me, but the mayor's office has the timeline and the schedule and in response to his letter?
Yes, we will.
All right. Any other questions or discussion?
I want to thank you very much for this, though, and I would hope you would continue to, not just on the blue line, but all of our lines, pay attention to the operations yep. and keep the system going. I know you need the money to do that, but I want to.
But it's all about it's all about customer service, and
yes.
customers aren't going to get on our
no.
buses or trains if they have to trek through junk to get there. So it's important both in the vehicles, but also on the platforms and the stations. So,
correct.
Thank you very much.
All right,
appreciate that. I guess we're done because we don't have a quorum anyhow. But besides that, anything else? Any other public comment? If not, thank you all very much. And we'll see you either in the later committee or next Thursday. Thank you all.
Policymaker, are you? I'm just going to check.
Well, I want to understand what the problem is.